On the record. On News Talk.
With Pinergy. Supplying energy with insight to forward-thinking Irish businesses.
Now, this year marks the 30th anniversary of the death of a man named Billy Behan. It's a name that might not be too familiar to many of you, but he's someone to whom the sport of football, and Manchester United in particular, owes a serious debt of gratitude. He was the Red Devils' chief scout in Ireland, and he gets credit for finding an awful lot of talent, all the way from the pre-Busby Babe stars like Jackie Carey, all the way through to the stars of Italia 90 and USA 94, the generation of Paul McGrath. And Donal Fallon has done some digging and he's here to tell us all about it. Donal, good afternoon and thank you for joining us. To make it as a footballer, someone really has to notice you.
Absolutely. And there's probably a lot of people listening to the radio now saying, I could have been one of the all-time greats. You know, it doesn't matter how good you are in that Sunday morning kickabout, you know, jumpers for goalposts. Someone has to see you. And the great Alan Parker, he of the Commitments fame, who we talked about not too long ago on this slot, had a great line. He said that, you know, for young working class people in Ireland, there are three ways to make it in the world beyond these shores. You become an actor, you become a musician, or most likely of all, you become a footballer. But you know, someone has to be aware that you're good at football. And into that role step the kind of football scouts of these islands. And increasingly, to be honest, the world beyond these islands. I mean, it's a really, really international job now. And, you know, you have player scouts, tactical scouts. Some people go to matches, you know, to get a sense of the opposition and how they play. But more often than not, the job of a scout is to find young talent. And it's staggering. Some clubs in the English Premier League now have dozens, some even in excess of 100 scouts apiece. But in an Irish context, there's really one footballing scout who matters above all else. And that is the great Billy Behan.
And I introduced him in the intro, and I'm saying this literally wearing a Man United jacket in studio this afternoon. I introduced him as the Man United chief scout in Ireland. And of course, that is important. But we should also think of him, you know, indirectly in terms of the story of the national team and not just the club.
Absolutely. And I think Billy Behan's name is probably better known amongst Mancunians, you know, than it is among people in his own city. But I mean, it's difficult to imagine the story of 20th century Irish football, I mean, the green jersey, without Behan, because, you know, indirectly, players that he found in the Irish game for Manchester United went on to become incredible star players of our national side. So, I mean, they probably wouldn't have got that chance. It's very unlikely Paul McGrath, you know, would have made it to the World Cup if he was still playing for St. Patrick's Athletic. But 30 years have now passed, you know, since the death of Billy Behan. So it is a reminder of just how much the world of football has changed in even three decades. I mean, can you imagine the Busby Babes or even the prior mention Paul McGrath uploading a skills video onto YouTube in the hope of being seen? Because that's what youngsters do now.
Tagging the club and the handle,
exactly. They try and put themselves on the market. But Billy Behan's a football man at the core. I mean, his father was a founding member of Shamrock Rovers Football Club, from the beating heart of Dublin football, Ringsend. And I just love when you look at a map of Ringsend, you can see the origin of Dublin football in the names. You know, Shelburne came from Shelburne Road. The Hoops came from Shamrock Avenue.
That's where Shamrock Rovers came from. I never knew where the name came from.
Shamrock Avenue.
That's what it's from.
It's fantastic. These just streets apart from each other, Shelburne and Rovers, are born. But the big two then were kind of Bohemians and Shelburne. Rovers' ascent was much slower. But young Billy sees it from the beginning, you know. And born in 1911, he begins as a goalkeeper with Westland Rovers and kind of works his way up.
Yeah, and maybe his experience or why he sort of understood the value of a scout is because he ended up going off to Man United himself as a young man, but it wasn't exactly the Man United of the glory days.
No, I mean, glory, glory Man United, forget about it in the 1930s. So he goes over to Manchester in 1933, 22 years of age, and the Manchester United of the 1930s is not glory, glory Man United. You know, it's a yo-yo club,
no, they're not.
As they say. It's up and down. And when it's down, it's really down. You know, 20th place in the second division in 1934. There's no commemorative scarves for that one. And the club nearly goes to the wall financially. So this is more than a decade. This is 12 years before kind of Busby mania and Matt Busby's arrival on the scene. And, you know, young Billy Behan, he spends one season in Manchester as a goalkeeper. But he kind of falls in love with the city as much as the club. He meets his wife, Vera, over there. And he remembers that although my stay in Manchester was brief, it fashioned my future. But one thing that people did have a sense of at 1930s Manchester United was that, okay, the contemporary may not have been good. The club wasn't performing well on the pitch, but there was the emergence of a kind of solid scouting network. Louis Rocca, incredible story, Louis Rocca. He kind of began as a T-boy and he made his way all the way up through the club,
wow.
Son of Italian immigrants. he joked that he had watched every child kick a football from Stockport to Salford, but he was also getting scouts everywhere he could, you know, Glasgow, Belfast, Dublin, to do that job across these islands. And Billy Behan, while it may not have worked out for him as a goalkeeper at United, I think Louis Rocca saw this great opportunity for a scout. And if there's one place they wanted to have, you know, a pair of eyes and ears, it was Dublin. So Behan kind of returns to Dublin with this Mancunian wife and becomes United's man on the ground here.
And immediately then becomes United's man, as they say, and straight away he leads the club to some gold.
Invites Rocca to Dublin and they go and see St. James's Gate take on Cork in the Ivy Grounds in Crumlin. And actually they go to see a totally different player to the one they end up taking. But United signed Jackie Carey and the British public come to know him as Johnny Carey, £250, which in the 30s, you know, is a lot.
Yeah.
It's a big enough sum of money. And Behan later said that Carey, who was to make for himself such an illustrious career with United, must be regarded as the greatest bargain of all time to come out of Ireland. But like, Carey was the first Irish celebrity soccer player. I mean, he captained United to the FA Cup, first Irishman to captain a cup-winning side. And Eamon Dunphy writes really movingly about him in his memoir. I think the fact that this young player had gone from the Ivy Grounds in Crumlin to Manchester United, he says, to the Irish soccer community of the 40s and 50s, Johnny Carey was more than a sporting hero. He was an iconic figure for reasons that had as much to do with national identity as sport. Mm. He played for both Irelands at the ludicrous time when the FAI in Dublin and the IFA in Belfast used to both put out national teams under the same name.
Yeah, yeah.
He played for both in one weekend. He actually played against England twice in one weekend for both Irelands. So that kind of player, Jackie Carey, is a scoop, you know, and he really is. He's the first Billy Behan scoop in Ireland. And I think for Manchester United, who have such an illustrious history of great Irish players, you know, in the 90s, it was Irwin and Keane. Mm. And there's that great book about them called United Irishmen. Brilliant name for a book.
It is, isn't
it? The story of the United Ireland connection in the modern sense, really, it's Jackie Carey where it begins.
Yeah, it's funny that he is better remembered in some circles for being, you know, the first Irishman to captain an FA Cup winning team. Because if you know anything about the Irish soccer schism and the fact that there were two different Ireland associations both proclaiming to represent all 32 counties, it's Johnny Carey's name that jumps out on them because he would so regularly field for both teams that eventually some players decided whether they were, you know, allied to the Belfast Ireland Football Association or to the Dublin Football Association of Ireland. But he didn't care as long as there was a green badge of shamrock on his breast. Liam Whelan, also known as Billy Whelan, followed, and Matt Busby had special praise for the team that he came from.
Liam Whelan came from Home Farm, Drumcondra, but crucially, you know, Drumcondra was near enough anyway to Cabra, which was kind of the new sprawling Dublin suburbia that was producing kind of great, great players. And Matt Busby said about Home Farm that it was the best organised amateur sports team in the world, the finest club of its kind, as they say in racing, class will always tell. That's incredibly high praise for Home Farm. But Liam Whelan, of course, perishes in the Munich air disaster. And Behan remembers in his memoir, a football club that just sounds really touching to me in its simplicity. He talks about the gloom that falls over Manchester, the survivors coming back and doing their bit at the club, you know, and he talks about Bobby Charlton. Mm. If anyone became a man overnight, it was Bobby Charlton, whose mother spent some time helping out at Old Trafford after Munich. A grand person, and I think she makes the best cup of tea in England. Can you imagine that kind of setup at an English Premier League team today? This was a club where, you know, new players that were brought over, like Liam Whelan, you know, were put up with the mothers of existing Man United players. Players themselves are at the club answering phones. You know, it was a very different ethos from the kind of footballing world we know today.
Yeah, I think even the era of Harchester United and Dream Team on Sky, a club that met with many senses of tragedy itself, you still wouldn't have a player's mother coming over to make cups of tea or to pick up the phone just to try and keep things moving. But such was life, I suppose, in the late 1950s. Johnny Giles has written about the presence of Billy Behan in Dublin, and he just seemed to cut this very omnipresent figure.
Johnny Giles' memoir, I think it's one of the great football memoirs of modern times, and he really captures Billy Behan and how he operates. He says he had a sixth sense for identifying the players who would make it, a bit like the way Vincent O'Brien could look at a yearling and in his mind's eye see a derby winner. At United, they valued their Irish links because of the calibre of player Billy found them. Billy would be moseying around the junior football pitches of Dublin, standing on the sidelines or refereeing matches, a football man to the core. And he wasn't just a talent spotter, he was an amiable man who was good at fostering relationships with a young player's family. I think that part of what Giles remembers is really, really important. That, you know, you go to a player's house in Cabra, in Crumlin, in the inner city, and you convince their families that, look, these lads, I don't know if they'll make it or not, but there's a support network there, you know, that will carry them through the rather daunting world of English football. And Giles, in his memoir, talks about coming into Manchester for the first time and, you know, the Industrial Revolution or what was left of it, you know, just the factories, the chimneys. He'd never seen anything like it. So you needed to take these kind of young lads by the hand, if you will, and convince their families to let them go.
Yeah, that support network that you mentioned is probably very important when it comes to the next person we're going to talk about, because when we talk about Billy Behan still being around for all this period in the 30s, 40s, 50s and 60s, he was still there, still working as a scout, and was still the person who's credited with finding Paul McGrath.
It's extraordinary to think that, you know, someone's life could be touched by the Munich air disaster. And then later on, you're also talking about players from the days of Italian 90 and USA 94. But he finds McGrath, and he had his eyes on Paul McGrath from seeing him play at Dalkey. So basically, Behan was aware of Paul McGrath before even St. Patrick's Athletic were. And McGrath's become, you know, in popular footballing memory, he's the black pearl of Inchicore. You know, his time at Pats was brief, but he's remained a kind of cult hero to St. Pat's fans. But, you know, he's watching him even before Pats get him. And Frank Mullen, who was there, and this is actually quoted in McGrath's brilliant book, at Dalkey, watching McGrath with Billy, remembered that I was standing beside Billy and Paul was brilliant. The match was only 10 or 15 minutes on. Everyone realised they were watching someone a class apart for his age. We knew virtually nothing about him, but he was awesome. It was breathtaking. And Billy said to me, look, whatever else happens, that kid is going to Old Trafford. So, I mean, that your sense of a good player, that it was strong in the days of Jackie Carey, and you still had that same radar in the days of Paul McGrath, I just find that absolutely extraordinary.
Yeah, and of course it should probably also be said that we know of all the names that he found that did go over and make it, but he probably also found quite a few as well and sent them over. And unfortunately, just in their cases, a lot of kids in football don't make it.
And that's really, really important to make that point. And only a few weeks ago, Sky News did a feature talking to young lads who've been let go by clubs and just couldn't find work. And, you know, the names that time has remembered, there's others, you know, the brilliant Kevin Moran amongst them. But most kids who go to play in England don't make it. And that's a cold, hard fact of football. And if they don't make it from Ireland, you know, that's a Ryanair flight home and hope for the best in the domestic game. But the kids come from right across the world now to England. And often, you know, they're left crushed. They're lured there by the promise of fame and wealth. And that's not always delivered. And, you know, people lose a chance to do something else with their lives, educational opportunities, to find it hard to get work. So there is a dark enough angle to that story that I think is very, very important.
Yeah, I only heard an Irish international talking on another radio station yesterday about how he left to go over to England just after doing his junior cert. And if things don't work out, if you need to come home and you need to try and find yourself a career, if you only have a junior cert to your name, you know, in the late 1990s or the turn of the century, it's not really a great place to be in. I suppose, and this is what sets Behan apart, though, that he always made sure that kids who went over were looked after off the pitch as well as their importance on it.
Absolutely. I mean, the importance of a support network in Britain, it was a very different Britain. Remember, the Britain that Liam Whelan went to, or even Johnny Giles went to, had a very significant Irish community, you know, and he always made sure that they weren't just part of the Manchester United family, that they fit into that community too, and that their families in Ireland had confidence in him and what he was constructing. And at the time of his passing, 30 years ago this year, Johnny Giles, we'll give Johnny Giles the last word, because, of course, he knew Billy well, said that the sad loss of Billy Behan will leave a void in football that will be felt by many people who love the game in these islands and more keenly in Manchester, the great man's adopted city. So there are teams of people today who are paid much, much more money,
yeah,
you know, and who sit in front of YouTube all day and try and find the next star, the next Liam Whelan. But you're someone who could find, you know, much more in the gold mine of Irish football with much less. Was the great Billy Behan.
Yeah. There's a bit of me that's glad that Billy Behan wasn't doing all of that over YouTube, because some of the skills videos that get posted to YouTube now, like, they're fine, they're obviously very heavily edited, but like some of the incredible, like, very punchy hard house dance music that soundtracks them, it, like, I don't know what it is about the subgenre of YouTube football video, but they always have the most horrendous soundtracks, and I'm just glad that he was spared that, at least, if nothing else.
I've seen some fellas line up for St. Patrick's Athletic who looked much better in Lithuania on YouTube than it is.
We'll get you to name those some other time. In the meantime, Donal Fallon, as ever, thank you very much for that illuminating slot this lunchtime. Donal Fallon, historian, the author of the Come Here To Be books, and the presenter of the Three Castles Burning podcast on Dublin history, which you'll find online. That is nearly all the time that we've got on today's show. A big thank you to today's production team, led by Stephen Jordan, also featuring Simon Keane, Julia Terreno, and Peter Malloy on sound. Off the Ball is up next. When I said that we were going to play out today with a song by Nirvana, because yesterday would have been the birthday of Kurt Cobain, Cobain, who amazingly, even after all these years, would only have been 54 years old yesterday, and he died half that time ago. He's almost been passed away for as long as he was alive in this world. It would have been his birthday yesterday, 54 years old on February the 20th. So we said we're going to play out with a Nirvana song, and Simon Keane said, well, you know, this is a talk radio station, so we have to play out with something a bit more mellow. It has to be something unplugged. And Julia Torino says, well, you know, Kurt Cobain's great, but he's no Bowie. And so I said, right, well, sure, we can figure out something that mixes both of those. So we'll play out with something from Bowie by Kurt Cobain this lunchtime. But first, a little bit of just how we really can claim everyone. Kurt Cobain talking about his own family links to County Cork. For me, Gavin Riley, and all the team, enjoy the rest of your Sunday.
I've never really known my ancestry. I didn't even know until this year that the name Cobain was Irish. I found out through different phone books throughout America. I couldn't find any Cobains at all, so I started calling Coburns. And I found this one lady in San Francisco, and she had been researching our family history. And we came from County Cork, which is a weird coincidence, because when we toured, we played in Cork. And the entire day, I walked around in a daze. I never felt more spiritual in my life. I was almost in tears the whole day. It was the weirdest thing.
For years and years I